Hi, Bobby here. I'm just jumping on quickly to let you know that this episode today is going to be a two-parter, so the second part coming out next Friday. The reason being, we had a really brilliant in-depth chat, me and the guest, and she's someone that I think was so articulate and in-depth with the kind of themes that came up that I really didn't want to just trim it down too much and squeeze it in. So instead, we're kicking off the new year with a brilliant in-depth two-parter, and if you are one of our wonderful Patreons, you'll hear the after interview chat following the second part. Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. This week I've got a guest here who I'm so excited about, a writer and speaker who studied psychology at Missouri State University, who then went on to do her Master of Divinity with an emphasis on race, cultural identity and reconciliation. I'm so delighted to have her on the show as someone I really look up to as a voice on issues of equality in America and indeed lessons the rest of the world can take from that. So welcome to the show, the brilliant Ali Henney.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. The listeners won't know by the time we've edited that, but I really mucked up the intro there.
No, it's all right. It's all right. There's a lot of moving parts. So
I wonder actually if that's partly you being a writer, that you, when I'm then looking you up on how to best describe you, it's so detailed. There's so much squeezed into every sentence, and then I'm like messing up the reading of it. So to start off, you've got a story to share about a past dating experience?
So I guess sort of a funny story that happened to me is I had a crush on a guy, really liked him. We were part of the same friend group, so we did a lot of stuff together, you know, saw each other a lot. And so kind of at that point in my life, the group of friends that I had, I was often one of the initiators of whatever outings or whatever that we would do. And so we had decided for a few weeks we just had really gotten on like a movie kick, and so going to the movies and whatever. So this was, you know, way back in like the early 2000s. So friends hanging out, goofing off, whatever. So in that friend group, there was a guy that I really liked. And so, you know, we just were friendly with one another, both kind of shy. Back then, especially, I was a little bit more outgoing, kind of on the surface, but I'm still very quite introverted. I'm like, oh, you know, I really, really like him. I'm not sure if he likes me. I'm not sure, like, if we're interested, because, like, we would talk and everything, but it's like, I'm not really sure if he's interested in me. And I don't know, like, if he would ask me out on a date, but hey, you know, I want to go out on a date. So I'm going to ask him to go out on a date. So, you know, we're together. And I was just like, yeah, you know, would you like to come to the movies? Really want to go see, like, K-19, which is like some Harrison Ford movie about like being on a submarine or some crap. Like, I don't even know. I really want to go to the movies this Friday. He's just kind of like, okay. Like, yeah. But I'm like really, really nervous. What? And you can tell he's just kind of like, okay, what's the big deal here? And I realized I never clarified that this was intended to be a date. So I'm sitting here thinking, he thinks that I'm inviting him out with our friends. So he was saying yes to going out with our group of friends. And so now, like, I have to go back and be like, yeah, actually, do you want to go on a date with me? And I just felt really weird. I mean, this is like, you know, Friends or like Seinfeld type drama. I mean, it's not really drama. I really could have just gone and asked and been like, okay, you know, actually, this is what happened. But I was just really nervous about it, because I was like, well, what if, like, so what if I ask him and like I put him in like this weird position where he didn't really actually want to go out on a date with me? Just like the type of things that you think, where it's like, okay, if I tell him, like, and if I clarify it, and if you thought that we were going out with our friends and then we're really going on a date, is he just going out on the date with me just to humor me or whatever, and he doesn't really actually want to be there and would, you know, rather like dip himself in a vat of ice cream and sit on an anthill? So like I said, total, like, just, I was just being a drama queen or whatever. But I talked to one of our mutual friends. Hey girl, like, I will ask him what he thinks is happening on Friday. So this was like a Tuesday that I'd asked him. I'm sitting here like on Wednesday, like, oh my gosh, my life. What is my life? We're going out on Friday and I've got to find out. Do I make up like this whole thing? Should I change it to where like it's not an A? Like, I'm just like, what is he? What does he know? What does he not know? Because one of the aspects of it too was that I'm pretty sure like at the end, like as he was walking off, I was like, the two of us together. But like, he didn't hear. I didn't know if he heard that part of it or not. So finally, my friend is just like, I will ask him and then I'll let you know. Okay, yes, do that. Because I'm just shy. I'm like, I don't know. Like, at this point, I'm just humiliated because I'm just like, I like him and he's going to think that I'm just a goober. And it's all those feelings that you have sometimes, like whenever you're just like, you want to impress somebody and it's whatever. So anyway, long story short, really, this was not a long story short. I made this story like way longer than it should have been. Yeah, it was really super convoluted. But my friend asked, so somehow by some miracle, he had understood it to be a date. And he had apparently heard my like choked the two of us at the very end. He did think at first that it was going to be a group thing. And he had said yes at that point, but he had said yes before he had heard the whole spiel from me, which is my fault. But he was okay with going out on a date with me. And so I was like, well, that's kind of awesome. So 15 years later, I am married to the man that was, like, he used to just say, like, yeah, we started dating because, like, she tricked me into going on a date with her. And then I didn't know, I didn't know how to say no. So I just kept going. I'm like, you need to stop telling people that. Stop it. mostly out of my own embarrassment. But the lesson that I took away from that instance, communication and being clear, but making sure that you're communicating what you need to communicate and not just, you know, letting like all the feelings and all the like, oh my goodness, and all the how you feel and your self-doubts and all this other type of stuff get in the way of communicating what you want, what you need, when you want it, and making sure that the other person knows. Like, that wasn't really that, you know, fantastic of a story, but
No, good. And yeah, you get some points for that story. I love it. But I think you've also highlighted a kind of trap of dating, right? That I think it's sort of inherently dishonest. Like, even if there hadn't been that mix up of communication, there's always some form of like performative communication, because, you know, you might have successfully asked him out in the way you wanted to, and you'd probably wanted to approach that situation being like really cool and really chill and like, oh, do you want to go out with me? And so you're purposely acting differently to how you're feeling. And so even if yes, it had gone well, it's still some kind of performance, and then you end up on the date and then you have to seem like you're an appropriate level of interested. You can't be like, oh yes, I'm with the guy I liked. You have to be like, nice to see you. Like, you have to keep it.
Yes, being interested, but not too interested. But then, like, and this is something that I've been off the market for like 15 years now. My partner and I, we don't have an open relationship. But in talking with my friends who are single, and particularly ones who have been single, really in this latest era of technology. So back, you know, in the day, whenever this happened, we had technology, but technology did not complicate the situation. So like, so it wasn't like, oh, I text him and you're having to figure out like the breadcrumbs of emojis and how long the person took to respond and the time of day they responded and all this other type of stuff. Like dating now, it seems like, wow, there's like, it's like trying to figure out hieroglyphics. Like, y'all are out here, like, you text the person, what time of day you text them, how quickly they responded. Did they leave you on red? Do they even give you red receipts? What emojis did they use? Did they not use emojis? They said three words versus they said 16 words versus they wrote a whole five paragraphs. And there is so much to decipher. And you talk about that aspect of performative communication. That's really what it is. And it's like, you don't want to seem too forward, but then you don't want to seem like you don't care. And I really don't envy people that have to figure all of that out. I just wonder what would happen for people if we were just like, you know what, hey, I'm interested in you, and we're above board kind of about that. Because really the root issue of that is you're putting yourself out there, and rejection sucks. Like being rejected sucks. And so you put yourself out there, but you don't want to put yourself out there too hard because you don't want to get hurt. I wonder what it would look like if we were more transparent with one another. And also with that, more considerate of one another's feelings, in that, you know, you might not feel the same way about that person in that moment. Like, you might not have the level of, oh my goodness, you know, this person like gives me butterflies and like whatever, but honor that, like, that person had the gumption to like say what it is that they felt. I'm an old woman, but I'm talking to the young people, you know, the young people. I could be completely wrong about this. So
no, you are making some good points. You've actually described how exhausting the whole texting of it all can be really well. Points to you for that, because you're right, that's what it is, and I felt exhausted even listening to it because it's for me.
Yeah, if I was ever on the market again, like, I wouldn't text. I would be like, you know what, like, I'm sorry, fam. Like, if we're gonna get together, like, I'm gonna need you to send, like, a carrier pigeon or something, because like, I cannot be deciphering these, I cannot be deciphering what these texts mean. Like, I like, you know, friends will be like, oh, this is, I'm like, you know, friends will be like, oh, this is,
but,
like,
but here's the thing, though, I sort of feel like it's still the same syndrome, though, right? Because you were in the situation you described, analyzing the whole conversation again and again. Yeah. And part of it is just the difference of now the conversation is there for you to stare at and scroll up and down and analyze and send print screens to your friends. So I think a lot of it is new and frustrating, but then it's still kind of the same stuff, you know, and really, that you still really have to analyze not just their communication, but also your own. Because equally in your situation, yes, you didn't have this complicating at the digital side, but equally you weren't going to go up to him and be honest about it and say, okay, so I think I asked you out wrong and I meant this thing, and actually now I'm wondering if I should unask you out. Should we go out with friends? Would you rather if we went out with friends? Now I feel like I'm being, do you know what I mean? You, like, if you actually word vomited how you were actually feeling, I think quite a reasonable response would be him be like, this is a lot. I'm just going to walk away now.
Right. That is so true. And, you know, there's no written record of what you said, and there's no written record of what the person said. So you do have to kind of just have to go off of your memory. The feelings are the feelings, regardless of what era that we're in. And that is absolutely true.
Yeah. Another parallel, if we segue over to something else that hasn't changed maybe as much as some people feel it has, is racism in dating. I know that you write a lot about racism in general, and I love your work. And so I'm really interested to hear what you think of where we are in terms of that, because the understanding has moved on, but at times it can feel like the behaviour hasn't. So people are labelling certain things preferences and using different language, but the intention hasn't necessarily changed.
Ooh, yes. So full disclosure in this, I am married interracially. And so I am a Black American and my husband is a white American. And so that's something that perhaps, for better or for worse, colors my lens. I dated a guy who was Hispanic. I think he actually was biracial, but identified primarily as Hispanic. Dated another white guy. I was from a small town, so I was related to the Black people. So, like, I was related to most of that, or it was just, like, weird, like, to be like, oh, I'm gonna date this person that I know I'm not related to, but everybody, all the Black folks in town are related to one another. So, like, it was just all things.
But
so,
even that I want to pause on, like, because that's so interesting, the assumptions that people would have. Because you have the same skin color, you must be related or dating or something, because I think that still happens so much today. And I was also listening to Nicole Byer's relationship podcast the other day, and she was saying only recently she'd like gone to the chemist or something, and someone went to get a prescription, came back, and the woman who it was for had gone, and she said, oh, where's your sister gone? And she just assumed the two Black women, the only two Black women in the shop, were related.
Yeah. So that's definitely a thing. And, you know, there's definitely, being from a small town, like, where there's a certain stigma of, like, if you are in a monoracial relationship for a Black person, not for, like, you know, all the 50-11 white people out there, but for a Black person, like, there's, like, almost kind of a stigma of, like, are you related? Like, are you dating your cousin? Are you whatever? And, I mean, you might well be, like, a distant cousin or whatever, but in a small town, guess what? The white people are probably also dating their distant cousins too. But this element of dating interracially, of marrying interracially, even the way that racism often factors into that is people have the misguided notion that interracial relationships are somehow an indication of progress. They really absolutely are not. A lot of times, whenever people enter into interracial relationships, not always, but a lot of the times, the people who enter into those relationships often are just as naive or just as whatever about race as the next person. So I've seen so many times when Black women have gone and have dated and have married or whatever white men, that somehow the topic never comes up. And that's something that I don't understand. And then you go and you meet this dude's family and they're racist and you're like, what in the world? And it's like, fam, like, you didn't think to have that conversation. I think that even like queer people don't really even experience that in that way, because it's like, it absolutely exists. But just from like the perspective of meeting somebody's family and this, that, and the other, it's almost like, at least for my perspective, it's like, you know, yeah, the headline is you're gay, you're bisexual, you're lesbian, and you bring somebody home, that can be a thing. And then race could almost be like a secondary issue, and not secondary in the sense that it's not important, but secondary in like, if people are going to be mad, there are a lot of different things that they can be mad about. I've encountered so many people of color that seem surprised when their spouse or their spouse's family or the person that they're dating, that those people pop off with racism. And I'm like, y'all, just because the person wanted to date you, just because the person, you know, they want to have sex with you, they find you attractive, whatever, like, that doesn't automatically pull the racism out of that person. Like, they still, like, this person can still have problematic views. Their family, just because you've married into somebody's family, like, I just think that that's something that Black folks in particular, like, we often don't get, because our families work kind of the opposite way, where if somebody comes into your family, like, we have this thing, you know, scholarly term for it is fictive kin. But with our histories, with I'm speaking particularly in American context, our experiences with chattel slavery and whatever, where your family was whoever was around you. So you might not be blood related to the people who are your family, but they're still your family. So the person who raised you might not be your blood relative, but they're still your family. And so that kind of mindset toward that tribal mindset toward family, toward relationships or whatever, that still exists in the Black American community. So whenever we bring people in from the outside, like, they get, in a lot of times, in a lot of ways, that person gets adopted into the family, regardless of who they are and where they come from and what they look like and whatever. Now, you do have elements, and this is in my experience, what I experienced too, where my family did have concern and did express concern, but it wasn't like, oh, well, you know, we just wanted you to date somebody or marry somebody who looks like us. It was never that type of thing. It was, okay, but are his people going to treat you right? Are they racist? Like, you're marrying into this family. And so, like, are they going to treat you okay? And, like, does he treat you okay? Has he called you the N-word? Like, whatever. Like, it's that type of concern. And so I think that a lot of people just have this mistaken notion that just because you have an interracial couple, it means that there's not racism. And so whenever we start talking about preferences and we start talking about all this other type of stuff, I get really super wary of that conversation, because first of all, I'll say, you know, you love who you love. You find attractive who you find attractive, just on that base level. And then there's people that you might relate to at a heart level, at a psychological level, at an intimate level, that maybe that person doesn't look like you, and love is love. But there really is the reality of whenever people are just saying, well, I could never be blah, blah, blah. Like, I could never, you know, date a Black woman because blah, 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 blah. Or, well, I just, it's always funny just with the preference, where we start playing the preference game, there are few people that would state that Black women is their go-to preference. And that if you had somebody who's dark skinned, like, you know, Afro textured hair or whatever, there are a few people that are that way. And there are white men that prefer Black women. But there have been so many times I've run into this where people, where it's like a fetish type thing. And it's so, and it is so like weird and dehumanizing, where it's like, okay, you're talking to me, like, because I mean, you know, I'm a Mary, but I still get hit on and stuff. And it's, and that's just super weird. But it's like, I know that, like, you don't just find me attractive. Like, there's like a weirdness to this. Like, this is like a fetishizing, dehumanizing type thing that you're engaging in. But, you know, preferences and stuff. I think that, yes, you know, we can say, like, often those that are preferred, like, look, have more European features. So, you know, as people preferring, here I'm talking in an American context, you know, as people preferring like Beyonce over Viola Davis, like that kind of thing, where it's like preferring, you know, people, it's like, oh yeah, I'm cool with you. I date a Black woman if she looked like whatever. And it's like, I mean, those, and no shade on Beyonce, and no shade on women who look like Beyonce, like at all. I mean, Beyonce is beautiful. Like Viola Davis is beautiful. It just gets really interesting whenever we start talking.
Well, it just makes your race very conditional, which is something we don't see towards white people. You don't hear people say, oh, I date a white person only if they look like this. There's not that conditionality. And I think a lot of that ties into the kind of Eurocentricity you've described that very much exists over here, that the preference towards European features and things that are associated often with predominantly white places. And I also loved what you said about the preferences, because my thinking on it is when I'm faced with that conversation, which I have been, of like preferences relating to skin colour, people will find these strange ways to kind of intellectualise it, and they'll have their theories on like, oh well, you know, that's what's familiar to me and things like that. And I can see what they're saying, but my concern is if your preferences seem to go along with colorism, if they seem to so commonly go in the same direction of lighter is better, and oftentimes people may feel these things and not even realize that that's going on. Like another example of where I think my perspective can be different to a lot of white British people, for example, me being white Irish, I've found so much commonality. So for me, diversity has always been this thing where I find similarities with people of other minority backgrounds in this country. We often have similar parental expectations. I've found we often have these similar concepts of being between multiple cultures. So for me, diversity is commonality. And so I think I never had to get past that. These people don't feel familiar to me. I don't know if I would get this person's life well enough to date them, which I think is a legitimate concern. But I don't know if that's necessarily means the answer is, okay, never date somebody that doesn't fit outside of what you know.
Yeah, that there is so much even in what you said, because, you know, again, me being an American, it's such a different context. As you talk, like, as a person that would be categorized as white, where you are in a society that still is very much multicultural, that compared to America, I should say, to me as an outsider, that's like my perception of like some of the bigger cities in like the UK, that there is a lot more cultural diversity that's intact. And I'm sure that there's dynamics of assimilation and there's all these other different things that probably are similar in America. But whenever you start talking about like just general white folks in America, there is not that understanding. Like, so even like, you know, we have this trope of tall, dark, and handsome, but they're not just saying like, okay, I only want to date dudes that have like Black hair and dark eyes and are over a certain height. You know, you get some Black dude that's tall, that has dark hair, has dark eyes. He doesn't fit the stereotype.
Well, here's the funny thing, and this is where I like to actually mess with people when they come with these kind of assumptions about, you know, what they should be attracted to. If someone said that to me, I might turn around to them and say, oh, so you're quite keen to date a person of colour then? And just watch their face, because that's not what they mean. And I know it's not
what they mean at all.
But the reason why I can do that is because I grew up around so much diversity, I can look at it from these different perspectives. And so oftentimes the kind of assumptions people have I love to turn them on their head. So another example is I had a friend a little while ago that got into what would be described as an interracial relationship for the first time. He'd grown up somewhere a lot more white and had moved to a bigger city. And just like you said, there was more diversity. And so got into this new relationship and was really worried about, you know, understanding her family, and, you know, and came to me with these concerns of, I don't know if I'm going to understand her culture. I don't know if I'm going to say the wrong thing, blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, had to say, well, first of all, it's a good start that you're recognizing these differences and you're trying to preempt the problems. But then also what he'd completely missed out on was that that could go both ways. He'd not thought she may struggle to understand my perspective because we live in this culture of a certain dominance. So wherever you live, and this even goes beyond race, if you are part of the dominant culture, ethnicity in that place, there can be an assumption that you are sort of the human default.
Yes.
And the danger of that is you look at it only from your perspective and you don't see, oh, they might be worried about dating a white person for the first time. Or they may have certain assumptions about his family that they also need to work through. You know, there can be those stereotypes on both sides.
You know, yes, exactly. And I think that whenever we start talking about whiteness being the default, because I think in a lot of spaces, that's what it is that whiteness is seen as the default. And unfortunately, what that does is whiteness gets to have all these dimensions. Like, you know, I referenced like the tall, dark, and handsome. So you can have that type of preference, or you could be like, oh yeah, I like blue eyes, or I like brown hair, or I like blah, 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 blah. And you can have all of these, all this dimension. It's like people will see dimension in whiteness, but will flatten everybody else. So Black people, like, there are different styles of Black people, to put it in different, like we come in a variety of colors, of shades. I was like, that's the word I'm going to use, is styles. There's a lot of different styles of Black people. We come in different configurations with different facial features, whatever. But oftentimes what happens to us is we get flattened to just like, oh, this is a Black person. So you don't, so people don't even give us a second look in terms of relationships. Or there's even, whenever you start talking about some of the beyond just like physical appearance things, whenever you start talking about culture, whenever you start talking about certain elements, oftentimes you might have more in common with somebody than you think. Yes, your skin color and your cultural experiences, some of the bigger, broader racially determined, ethnically determined experiences, those things can be different. But whenever you throw class into the mix, there are people that are going to, and in an interracial context, where you might not be the same racially, but you might have similar experiences because of class. Like, yes, we were part of the same clubs, we went to the same schools, whatever. And so I had a different experience because of my race, but we still have commonality and compatibility in the sense of where you could have two white people, that there could be a difference in class. Somebody can be upper middle class and somebody be, you know, lower middle or working class rather, and there'd be differences in that person not know how to be in certain situations. I think that even with my husband and I grew up in like fairly middle class. It was a complicated situation, but my husband's family was an agricultural family. They for multiple generations on both sides of his family, they were farmers. So I had grown up eating a lot of foods, a lot of different types of foods than what he did. And that's culture, but that's also like stuff that would be like American cuisine, like going to the fake Chinese restaurant in America and eating food and knowing what to order and how to order it and how to eat it. My husband didn't have those experiences. So there's like a little bit, so there's just like differences in experiences because of how one's life is positioned, is centered around the farm and the crops and all that other type of stuff. So there were experiences whenever my husband and I first started dating that he hadn't had, that he was just like, yeah, I just don't, like, I'm not going to eat this food. I have no idea what this is. I've never had this before. There's things even within that, that yes, we were interracial, but if I was a white woman, he would have had those same experiences of, yeah, like, you know, I've never actually eaten calamari before. Like, so I don't know what to do with this. And yeah, those are other elements that I think we have to think about too.
And I think that's part of my concern. If we don't talk about certain differences, we lose the nuance of other differences. Mm-hmm. And what you've kind of reminded me of that's certainly very common here is if you are aware of being in a minority background and you are also a person of colour, there can be this expectation from your community or your family of representing us. And it's like you said, that kind of flattening of people, that if someone mm-hmm. has a bad experience with one black person, they might then apply that to every black person they ever meet. And that yeah. is not a problem with the black people. That's a problem with this kind of narrow way of looking at humans, like skin colour inherently defines who you are and your value and what your behaviour mm-hmm. will be. And actually, mm-hmm. that is to the detriment of all of us. We all become a bit more like a caricature. Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.